All right, Shalom Chevra. The topic for today is the Avos of Reb Chiya. So the Gemara mentions on Daf Dalet Amid Beis, according to Reb Chiya, there are 24 Avos Nezikin. There are the 13 of Rav Hoshea, and also Kefal, Dalet Behe, Gan of Gazlin, Edom Zomin, Ones Mefata, Monsi Shemra, Metame, Medamea, and Menasich. There are a couple of, one or two key questions to consider when going through the Avos Nezikin of Reb Chiya. The first one, parallel to the question we asked on Rav Hoshea, is what's the nature of Reb Chiya's expansion of the list of Avos Nezikin? Why is he going from 4 or 13 to 24? And we consider two basic options, the same two basic options that we considered with regard to Rav Hoshea. The first one being that these are just different cases of Tashlumin. The Gemara is providing a list. It's lav davka, a conceptual list. It's just trying to tell you all of the different cases in which we're going to have Tashlume Nezikin. And if that's the case, then we're going to suffice with any differences that we can find between the categories. So as long as one category doesn't reduce to another, as long as it cannot be subsumed within another, then it can count as another category. But the second option, the one preferred by Rav Rosenzweig, and the reason why we spent so much time going through these sugyos, is to say that these categories are not just cases of Tashlumin, but rather they're types or paradigms of Tashlumin, and that's what we mean by Mechayvim. These are different paradigms of Nezikin and have Tashlumin on different bases. One nafkamina right at the very outset as to these two different options is whether we're going to be comfortable including Dirabbanan types of Tashlumei Nezek on the list. So this is actually a machlokas between the Pnei Yoshua and the Marikatz. The Pnei Yoshua and Bava Kama Dalet Amid Beis and also Hayamad Aleph says that Dirabbanans are not going to be included in the Avos Nezikin. And the Marikatz, in contrast, says that Dirabbanans can be included in the Avos Nezikin. And Rav Rosenzweig noted that if we're looking for types or paradigms of Tashlumin, then there shouldn't be any reason why we couldn't have Dirabbanans. Within the Darabonot, we could also have a new paradigm of Nezikin, and therefore we could include that on the list. But the Pnei Yoshua saying that we would only have the Oraisas, so maybe it could just be that we're trying to limit it to the Oraisa paradigms, or maybe, as we'll see later in the Pnei Yoshua was more looking at this list as different cases of Tashlumin. That's the first question. The second question, very closely related, is what exactly, if anything, does Reb Chiya's expansion reflect about the categories that are then included on the list? We were basically using this sugya as a window, as an opening into understanding all of these different categories. It was kind of like a hakdamashir, the kefal, dalet vehei, gneva gzela, midameya, menasich. Why is it a hakdamashir to all of them? Because the fact that these cases or these categories appear on the list implies, if we take the list seriously, that there is some distinctive conceptual underpinning of this category and its status as a type of nezek. So our task today is to go through a number of these categories, keeping both of those questions in mind. Number one, whether our discussion of the category reflects something about the nature of the list. And number two, what we can learn about the category itself in virtue of the fact that it appears on the list. The categories that we're going to discuss are Geneva and Gzela, Kefal Dalet Behei, Edom Zomimin, Menasich, and Mefagel. Of course, Mefagel is not on the list. So, Hezek She'inu Nikar, Be'ezran Hashem, is going to be covered by Isaac next week. Okay.
What?
Kaz, what are you saying? You have some play by play to add? All right, let's begin with Geneva Gzela. So, if we take the assumption, like Rav Rosenzweig was saying, that these categories are really different conceptual or paradigms of Nezek, then we're going to need to distinguish between the categories. We're going to need to find what their fundamental distinctions are. So the first question to ask with regard to Geneva and Gezela is what exactly is the difference, if any, between the Mechayiv of Geneva and Mechayiv of Gezela. So Rosenzweig suggested, he has a whole mahalach on this issue, that Geneva really emphasizes the Maisa Hotza'a Mirishus, the fact that Reuven does the action of taking something of Shimon's property away from him, while Gezela emphasizes the Hefsed Mamon, the fact that Reuven causes Shimon a monetary loss. What evidence can we garner towards this conclusion? So there are a number of differences between Geneva and Gezeila that might accentuate this conclusion. The first one, Geneva amanas lameikat, Geneva in order just to be mitza'er, just to joke around and annoy someone else. So the Gemara says that Geneva amanas lameikat is aser, and the Rambam codifies that, codifies or codifies? I always get that wrong. What is it, Micah? Okay. So the Rambam includes that in his presentation at the beginning of Hilchos Geneva in Perek Aleph, that Geneva amanas lameikat is aser, and Rav Rosenzweig likes to be tzvi. What is it? Codifies, yeah? Because I've been told otherwise. Is that true? We have a third? We have a business?
It's either one, either one. On the dictionary, it says either one. Codify
okay.
Or codify.
Oh, good. Makes me feel good. Okay. So, Rav Rosenzweig likes to be medayik from the fact that the Rambam has this very upfront that this case of Geneva Manas Lameikat, the Isser of Geneva Manas Lameikat, is representative of the Yesod of the Isser of Geneva. And of course, in Geneva Manas Lameikat, so the Hefsid Mamon is very much diluted because there's only a temporary Hefsid Mamon, if any Hefsid Mamon at all. The person is just trying to annoy, he has all intention in the world to return the object. So really, what Geneva Manas Lameikat is all about is the Maisa of Hotza Meirishus, the fact that you're taking someone from someone else. And the Rambam presenting that with prominence at the beginning of Hilchos Geneva suggests that that might rest at the core of the Isser of Geneva. In addition, if we apply this just to Geneva and not to Gezeila, then that might also suggest that there's some difference between Geneva and Gezeila with regard to the emphasis on the Yesoda Isser, whether it's the Maisa Hotzah Meir Shus of the Hefsid Mamon, and the Miyuchas L'Ritva and Bavi Metzias Amachalef Amin Beis thinks that it is applicable. Rav Rosenzweig also quoted the Yad Raman and the She'iltos, but I couldn't find where those were. But the Rambam thinks that it's not applicable. You're only going to say Geneva Amanas L'Meikat, you won't say Gezeila Amanas L'Meikat. And if, again, if you hold of Rav Rosenzweig's approach to the concept of Amanas L'Meikat, then that very much suggests that the Yesod HaIsser of Geneva is Maisa Hutzar Meirshus, whereas the Yesod HaIsser of Gezeila is the Hefsin Mamon that is caused and that takes effect. Second one, the Minchas Chinuch talks about Geneva from Gayim. So he says that maybe even if Gezeila as Akum is the Rabbanon, nonetheless, Geneva as Akum might be the Oraisa because the Torah prohibits the Mida Grua of Geneva. And the way that Rav Rosenzweig explained this Mida Grua of Geneva point is that really we're trying to focus on the Maisa Hotza Meirshus. The Torah is telling us that that Maisa inherently is something that's improper and therefore is going to be Aser regardless of its effect, regardless of the result that stems from it. So the Minchas Chinuch saying that Geneva from Akum would be the Araisa because of the Maisa Hotza Meirshus, whereas Gezeila of Akum might be, Geneva of Akum might be the Oraisa, whereas Gezeila of Akum might be the Rabbanon, might also be linked to that distinction. Next, the Ptur Malkos. So what's the basis for Ptur Malkos in Geneva and Gezeila? The Rambam in Hilchos Geneva says that the Ptur Malkos for Geneva is based on Lav Hanita on the Tashlumin, whereas in Gezeila it's based on Lav Hanita Kla'aseh. And the Rav and also Rav Rosenzweig explained that the concept of Lav Hanita Kla'aseh assumes that something can be undone, that something can, you can go back to the status quo. You can use the Aseh in order to fix the Lav. Maybe that's applicable to Gezeila, where you have a Hefsin Mamon, and you can make up for that Hefsin Mamon. You can reimburse the person to whom you damaged. But the Maisa Hotza Meirishus, even if you return the object, so maybe you return the case to the status quo, but you will have always done that Maisa Hotza Meirishus. You will have always done that improper action. And therefore, we need to look elsewhere, like the concept and principle of Lav Hanita Natashlumin, in order to explain why there's a Ptur Malkus for Geneva. Next, Velomi Beis Haganov. So the Torah tells us that a Goniv is going to be Chayav when he steals from the principal Bailim, but not from another Ganov. So is this applicable to Gezeila? So some think yes, but the Tosfos written Bava Kama, Kuf Yod Aleph Amid Beis, thinks that this is applicable only to Geneva and not to Gezeila. What's the Svara behind that? So Rav Nosson Siegel suggests that Velomi Beis HaGanov, so this is also consistent with the distinction between Geneva emphasizing the Maisa Hotza Meirishus, whereas Gezeila emphasizing the Hefsin Mamon. What's the idea? So once you do a Maisa Hotza Meirishus, once you take something from the principal Bailim, you can't do that again. It was already done. So when you take something from a Ganov, you're not doing a Maisa Hotza Meirishus. The Maisa Hotza Meirishus was already done. So therefore, Goniv Min HaGanov is going to be exempt. Whereas Gozel Min HaGazlon is going to be Chayev. Why? Because the Hefsin Mamon resides in his property. Right? He's in possession of the Hefsin Mamon. He's right now the one who's responsible for the fact that the principal Bailim are at a loss. And therefore the Gozel Min HaGazlan is going to be Chayuv. In addition, the Tosos written above a Kama Samech Hey Aleph also distinguishes between Geneva and Gezela with regard to the Shumas HaTashlumin. The Gemara above a Kama Samech Hey quotes Rava. Rava or Rav? I forgot. Rav. Quotes Rav, who says, Karen Kain Shaganav, Kefal Vadal Vehei, Kishas HaMada Bedin. And the Tosas read on that sugya says that when you have a gzela that's be'en, so you can always say harishal chav lefanecha. But when you have a geneva that's be'en, sometimes harishal chav lefanecha will not be sufficient. For example, if there was depreciated value from the time of the geneva until the time of shuma, so then even if the geneva is still be'en and you return the object, you're still going to have to make up for the difference in shovi. You're still going to have to make up for the value that was established at Kein Shoganav. So what emerges from that Tosos Rid is that there is an incredible emphasis on the Shas Geneva, specifically with regard to Geneva, and not with regard to Gezela. With regard to Gezela, as long as you have the object, you give it back, you're good. But with regard to Geneva, it's Nikba B'Shas Geneva. That's the amount that you have to give back to the Nignav. Why would that be the case? So again, I think what we were suggesting was after the Tosos Rid, Geneva emphasizes the Maisa Hutsa Amir Shus, and therefore the Tashlumin of the Geneva is going to be linked to that time, that moment. You look confused. Mike?
Me?
Yeah.
No, it's
good. Good. Next. We then went on to discuss the machlokas between Rav Ushi and Rav Chia, whether to count Geneva and Gezela as distinct avos nezikin from Shomer Chinom and Shoel. According to Rav Ushi, Geneva and Gezela are subsumed within Shomer Chinom and Shoel, whereas according to Rav Chia, they are separate from them. So that's the that's a little bit of background. I'm not going to go through the first section of B, where I go through all of the different shitos as to what the cases of Geneva, I wrote Gevina there, it's Geneva. What Geneva and Gezela would be if they're subsumed as Shomer Chinom and Shoel. But what I do want to note, there's a lot of different opinions on that topic, Rashi, Rajba, Ravid, Nitziv. But what I do want to note is what lies behind this Nekudas Machlokas, right? What's the Machlokas, whether to count all of these as part of Shomer Chinom and Shoel, or whether to have distinct categories? So you could view it in one of two ways, I think. One of them could be that it's a Machlokas about the list. It's a machlokas whether we should include only distinct paradigms or even cases with differences. So maybe everybody agrees that that we don't have distinct paradigms here, but maybe we do have differences such that, meaning Rav Chia is trying to say that there's enough of a difference between Geneva and Gezela and Shomer Chinom and Shoel, or whatever the Geneva Gezela cases of Shomer Chinom and Shoel are. There's enough difference between classical Geneva and Gezela and the satellite Geneva and Gezela of Shomer Chinom and Shoel that these can all make the list. Whereas Rav Ushia would respond that no, I'm looking for different paradigms here, and the Geneva and Gezela cases that are subsumed within Shomer Chinom and Shoel are really the same paradigm of Nezek as the classical Geneva and Gezela, and therefore I'm not going to count Geneva and Gezela separately once I already counted Shomer Chinom and Shoel. I'll get to you in a second. The second approach, I think probably the one we preferred, is to say that no. Really, the machlokas is whether to view everybody agrees, both Rav Ushia and Rav Chia, they all agree that we're looking for distinct paradigms here. The question is how to view the cases at hand. The Asal Yad Be'atir and the Asal Yad Be'isura, classical Geneva and Gezela of the Asal Yad Be'isura, and the satellite cases of the Asal Yad Be'atir, are those distinct paradigms or not? So Rav Ushia might view these subsets as really more related to just to Shoel and Shomer Chinom, whereas Rav Chia thinks that really they are distinct paradigms. Yeah.
Yeah. So just, I don't know if anyone ever asked this, but let's say the first approach. So if you say that the satellite cases are really cases of Mechayev of Gzela, so why wouldn't Rav Ushia count Gzela and Geneva and then subsume them, and then would be Shomrim? Meaning, isn't it a little ironic that the satellite case, which represents the Machayev of Geneva and Gzela, which is really just a mere satellite, the classical case of Shomrim isn't really the Machayev that we're discussing. Shouldn't it be reversed?
Yeah, you're saying that in the second option.
Or either one where you then say that the satellite cases are the paradigms of Geneva and Gzela. So wouldn't it...
So then, right. It seems like... it seems like Rav Oshia is going to have to say that there's some closer relationship between Shomrim and these and Geneva and Gazila to begin with.
In general.
Yeah. Right. Kind of like the Netziv was saying, that the whole basis for Chiyuv Onsin in Geneva and Gazila is from Shoah.
Don't we say for Tainus, if the Pshat is Tainus Ganov, like Tainus Mal, Tainus Ganov, that it's really giving Shomer?
Yeah, meaning that one of our options was to view these satellite cases as really like Dinim and Shomer. But you don't get, I mean, I guess you could, right, I get that could be, maybe that's more of a Mistabra thing to say. You could say that Rav Oshia is not including Geneva and Gazela, the classical Geneva and Gazela, for some other reason. He thinks it's too far-fetched. That's not Nezek. That's something way worse, even or something different from Chavala, right? The Gemara is saying that I'm including Geneva and Gazela within the Shomer. So you can't say he's not including Geneva and Gazela. You just have to find a case of Geneva and Gazela that can be included as Shomer Chinam and Shoah. Right. So wouldn't you have to eventually say that even the classical Geneva and Gazela would be like more related to Shomrim or Shomer Chinam and Shoel if you're not going to count it separately?
You have to.
It doesn't make so much sense, right?
Me, that's what I found it wrong. We're talking about Shomrim satellite cases, but really it's completely flipped. And Matthias would be more based on Geneva and Gazela.
So maybe it's more mistabish just to say that this is an indication that we're not really looking for paradigms.
Right.
Yeah, Alex.
You know, alternatively, you could say that just like when we came to Goneva when asked Lameka, so the Gemara Davka says that's what the unique drasha of Goneva is, because you want to highlight the specific part. You want to choose a case, Davka, where you don't have all these distracting details that, oh, that might be the Mechayim might be about the Chisaron Kesef or X and Y.
Okay.
So if you have like a Shomrim case where you lose a lot of the backdrop of other things that you might think are the Mechayim of the paradigm, and you focus on, oh, it's Davka, Shomrim Chinam, and a Shoel, which the only thing wrong with them is also the other bit. The only thing wrong with them is a very specific mechayiv.
Mm-hmm.
So then it's a lot easier to say like, oh, this is the mechayiv is Shomer Chinam and Shoel, where they have a much clearer presentation of what the unique mechayiv is, as opposed to Geneva and Gazela. Each one looks like it has a
the mechayiv of Geneva and Gazela, not of Shomer Chinam and Shoel.
But it's the same.
I mean, we're looking for cases of Geneva and Gazela. Shomer Chinam and Shoel, the classical cases of Shomer Chinam and Shoel, are on the list. That's very simple. What we're looking to do here is to include cases of Geneva and Gazela within Shomer Chinam and Shoel. Right? We're looking for some case of Shomer Chinam and Shoel that can be described or defined as Geneva and Gazela. Because we're trying to include the categories of Geneva and Gazela. So what the problem that we're facing is that we're doing two things at once. We're counting both Shomer Chinam and Shoel on the one hand, and we're also counting Geneva and Gazela, but we're lumping all of them together, all of those together, right? So if you're really looking for paradigms, then you should say that there's really all of that is subject to one paradigm, right? But that's difficult to say. Unless you'll kind of bite the bullet and say, yeah, in Achinami, I'm looking for different mechayvim here, but nonetheless, I'm going to count the Geneva and Gazela within Shomer Chinam and Shoel in order to emphasize to you what the mechayv really is. So I'm not going to count it separately on the list, not because I don't think that they're distinct paradigms, but because this is a better method to use in order to impress upon you what the mechayv is. That's along the lines of what you were saying. That's my best shot.
I'll do the opposite. I'm saying, according to that answer, I'll do the opposite. Like, have Ganav and Gazlin. And the Gemara should ask about Shomrim, and if we say Shomrim with Lav Kinevi Tila, and that's Kishma, because then really the potential there is the Ikaron. The only thing there is Machai Kinevi Tila. But you're saying.
Yeah. Anybody had? Did anybody infer anything else from Shir as to what we were saying? Tzvi, nothing. Okay. Yeah, I think that's the best we have here. Okay, that takes care of Geneva and Gazeva. Let's move on to Kifel and Dalad Vehe. So these are two knossos associated with Geneva. What we're going to try to prove is that these knossos might be different from other knossos. Whereas other knossos are more penalties that are external to a maisa that was done. It's kind of imposed as an afterthought to the maisa. Kefal and Dalad Vehe might share a more intimate relationship with the maisa, despite the fact that they retain the status of a knas. So what indications do we have of the relationship between Kefal, at the very least, and the Maisa Geneva itself? So Rosenzweig quoted the Gemara in Bava Kama Samachesim and Beis of Chazar Karen the Bailim, that if the Ganav returns the Geneva prior to Ahmad Abedin, so he's going to be Potter from Kefal. Why is he Potter from Kefal in that case? So that suggests that Kefal is very much related to the Geneva. And once you make up for the Geneva, then the Kefal can fall by the wayside as long as this was all done prior to any din. That's one indication. A second indication would be if the Shas Geneva is really the Mechayev of Kefal. We know in general that with regard to Knasos, there's a lot of evidence that the Knas is even triggered or created by Shas HaAmad Bedin, by the Psak Din, by the Gemara Din and Bezdin. But if we think that the Kefal is created, it comes into existence in virtue of the Geneva. Even if it's only imposed at the Gemara Din, if it comes into existence in virtue of the Geneva, not only in virtue of the Geneva, but if it actually comes into existence at the time of Geneva, then that would be a major indication that the Kefal is related at its core to the Maisa Geneva. And indeed, the Lashon of the Tosfos Reid, both in Bava Kama and in Bava Metzia, suggests that Mahalach. Okay. So if we want to get to the Mechayiv of Kefal, again, we want to just to remind ourselves, we're keeping track of two questions here. The first question is how to view the list. Paradigms or cases of Tashlum? So if we think that these are different paradigms, Kefal and Dalad Vehe, we're going to have to be able to distinguish between their Mechayivim. If we think that they're just different, then that's enough, because they're different amounts, right? You don't really need very much more than that. So in order to make the case that we're dealing with different paradigms here, we're going to need to get into the Mechayivim of Kefal and Dalad Vehe, and that is the second question that we posed at the very beginning, what the list reflects about the categories that are included. So first, let's discuss the Mechayiv of Kefal, and in order to discuss that, we need just a bit of background, and that is that there could be different dimensions of a Geneva. Rosenzweig explained two different formulations of multiple dimensions of a Geneva. The first was a combination of Maisa Hotza'a Mirashus, the improper, the invalid and illegal, the illegal action of Geneva, and the second of Totza'as Hefsein Mamo, the cause, the effect, the result that happens based on or via the Maisa Hotza'a. The second formulation was the Geneva of the Be'en versus the Geneva of the Shovi, to distinguish in the Davar HaNignav. So you could steal the actual item, and you could also steal the value of the item. And sometimes you could distinguish between those two, and maybe those two combine into one form of Geneva. What evidence do we have that there exist multiple dimensions of Geneva? Do we just make this up out of nowhere, or do we have some evidence? So we love to quote this Rashi, Bava Kama Samach Vav Amud Aleph, very Mechudasha Rashi, who says, that Tzloim Kedemeikara Damim Kishel Achshav. I mean, the Gemara says that, and referring to Kefal, that how do you decide? So that's what the Gemara says with regard to Kefal. And Rashi has a very mechudash explanation of that Gemara, where he says that Tlon Kedemeikara means that if you pay in kind, then the value by which you pay is going to be determined by Kedemeikara, by the Shas Geneva, whereas Damim Kishal Achshav, if you decide to pay in value with cash, then it's going to be determined, the value will be determined by Kishal Achshav at the time of Ha'amad Bedin. So it could actually end up being that you will pay more or less depending on how you choose to pay. If you pay in kind versus if you pay in value. So Rosenzweig said the very obvious point, how do you justify such a Rashi? So what we explained was that Rashi here is really getting to this yesod that there are two dimensions in a Geneva. And these two different types of tashlumin reflect, these two modes of tashlumin reflect two different mechayvim in the tashlumin, a concept that we've been fond of quoting within the Sogya of Meitav. When you pay in kind, so then what you're doing is restoration. you are making, you're not only making up for what you did, but you are restoring what you did. In a sense, you are bringing the person back to the time or prior to the time of his geneva. Right? Originally, the person had X, then he lost X, and now he has X again. So it's as if the geneva never happened. Whereas, if you choose to compensate, you're not giving the person X back. You're just giving him something back that levels his playing field. He lost X, now you need to make it up to him for that. And in order to make it up to him, you give him something back that's worth X. So when you pay in kind and you do restoration, when you do restoration, what Rashi's saying is that it makes a lot of sense that restoration will take place via paying in kind. Because when you give the person back exactly what he lost, then you can view his situation as having been repaired back to its status quo. Whereas when you compensate the person and give him back the value, he doesn't have, the status quo no longer exists. He's not the same person in the same situation as prior to the geneva, but he hasn't had a monetary loss. You've made it up to him. And therefore, the damim payment is going to be the compensation. And Rashi says that the restoration payment, the payment of tlaim, is going to be based on the shas geneva. Why? Because when you pay via restoration, so then what you're doing is you're making up for the maisa geneva, for the maisa hutzah meirshus. You took this tleh from Shimon, you give the tleh back in order to undo that maisa. Whereas, if you pay by compensating in value, then what you're doing is you're making up for the hefsid mamon that you caused, or the geneva shovi that you took. And therefore, that would address that dimension of the geneva. What emerges from this Rashi is that there are multiple dimensions of a geneva. There is the Maisa Hotzah Meirshus, and there is also the Hefsin Mamum. And it's up to you to decide whether you would like to address this geneva via the prism of Maisa Hotzah Meirshus or via the prism of Totzah's Hefsin Mamum. That's a nice raya for these multiple dimensions of geneva. So now that we know the multiple dimensions of geneva, we're going to want to get to the mechayiv of kefil. Does kefil maybe, we said before that there were indications that kefil is bound up in the maisa geneva itself. It shares some more internal or intimate relationship with the geneva in contrast to other knasos. So could we say that it actually addresses a second dimension, an additional dimension of the geneva? Whereas the keren addresses some basic dimension of the geneva, the kefil comes to address another dimension of the geneva. We just proved that there are multiple dimensions. So what evidence could we garner towards that conclusion? So we have this beautiful piece in the Tosos Rid, Bava Kamas HaMachayim and Aleph. And I thank Hasher in advance for his Ha'arus on this Tosos Rid. So the Tosos Rid says like this. When it comes to kefil, so you can always say harish alchalafanecha, even if there was depreciated value. Remember, the Tosfos Rid said the same thing for gezela. So the Tosfos Rid equates gezela with kefil. Just as you can always say harish alchalafanecha for gezela, so too you can always say harish alchalafanecha for kefil, even if the value of the geneva depreciated before the time of shas hamad b'din of the kefil. But when it comes to the keren of the geneva, says the Tosfos Rid, that always has to be kishas geneva. What's the yesod of the chiluk, according to the Tosfos Rid, between the keren and the kefil? So what we were suggesting in Shir is that perhaps the keren corresponds to the maisa hutzah amirishus. And that's going to be defined and established by the moment of the geneva. So when you pay the keren, you are paying the onesh, so to speak, for the improper and illegal action that you did. Says the Torah that if you steal, then you need to make up for that action. The way that you repair that action is by paying back the keren. That traces, that undoes the action of Maisa Hotza Amirishus. And that's going to be determined by the time of the Maisa Hotza Amirishus. But in addition to that Maisa Hotza Amirishus, as we proved from Rashi and Bava Kamas and Mechvav, there's also another element. Whether that be the geneva of the shovi, or whether that be the hefsin mamun that you caused to the nignav. And that second dimension is what kefil comes to address. Kefil remains a knas. Why? Because ultimately you're paying twice for the same thing. But it's a different, it's a unique type of knas, because it's one that addresses an actual dimension of the iser, as opposed to something that is imposed on top of the iser. So the kefil would address the totsas hefsin mamon shebo of the geneva, and therefore if you can just give back the object, if you can say arei shalcha lefanecha, so that's sufficient even if there was a difference in value between the shas geneva and the shas hamad bedin, because arei shalcha lefanecha is a way of addressing the totsas hefsin mamon. You give the guy back what you stole, so you now he's not at a loss anymore. So that Tosos Rid was a nice piece of evidence towards the conclusion that the Mechayiv of Kefil is to address an additional dimension of the Geneva, and the fact that Geneva has multiple dimensions is what we proved from the Rashi in Bava Kama Samach Vav Amad Aleph. So that is all within the discussion of the Mechayiv of Kefil. But now getting back to Rabbi Chiya's list, where we include both Kefil and Dalet Vehei on the list, we're going to want to know what the difference is between Kefil and Dalet Vehei. Is it just a quantitative difference? In which case, maybe it's the same Mechayiv, and the fact that it's on the list is just representative of the notion that we're looking for different cases here, right? Different types of, not different fundamental types of Tashlumin, but different cases of Tashlumin. So Kefil's one case, it's based on Geneva. Dalet Vehei is another case, it's based on Tvicho Mechir. Or are we saying that these are two different Mechayiv? So those are the two different options as to the relationship between Kefil and Dalet Vehei, and I want to go through one piece of evidence towards each conclusion. One piece of evidence towards the conclusion that really we're dealing with the same Mechayiv here would be Rabbeinu Tam's position, quoted in Tosos Rabbeinu Peretz on Samech Ches Amid Beis, that according to Rabbi Yochanan, that Yush Kedi Kani, you could still be Chayiv for Dalet Vehei of Tvicho Mechira Le'achar Yush. So what happens? The Nignav was Misyayish, the Gonev is Kone the Geneva, it's his. And nonetheless, when he's toveach u'mocher, he's chayiv dalet vehei. How could you say such a thing? It's his object. Shalohu toveach v'shalohu mocher. How could Rabbeinu Tam have this suggestion within the position of Rabbi Yochanan? So Rav Rosenzweig said, it can't be that the dalet vehei is an additional mechayiv here. Because you can't be over on an additional mechayiv once the object's yours. Elamai, there has to be some stigma that is latent within this davar hanignav that remains even after your kona, the davar hanignav. So yes, you were kona through the means of yush, but the thing that you were kona was the thing that you stole. It always remains that type of object. And therefore, other chiyuvim, such as tficho mechira, can, maybe we would formulate it as that they can entrench the geneva, they can add to the geneva, they can continue the geneva. That you can only, that's something that you can say, if within this position of Rabbeinu Tam, that you'll be chayav dalet vehei achar yush. And if you say that position, if you stake that approach, so then what you're saying is that the dalet vehei is really just a continuation of the original kefil. The tvicho mechira is a continuation of the original geneva. It's something that entrenches it even further. And that would be to say that really they're sharing the same basic mechayiv, it's just different stages of a geneva. Remind.
Yeah,
he already lost the Hefsim Mamun, and that Hefsim Mamun's never coming back. But maybe the Hefsim Mamun is made more egregious by the fact that you lost the ability to be Meshiv Be'en. Yes, we mentioned that in Shir. What do you want to say? I don't know. We just mentioned it as maybe being reflective of there being different Mechayim.
Yeah, Mishtar should be like entrenching that thing.
I mean, you want to say maybe that machlokas is exactly this machlokas? Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe that's where we're getting at. Yeah, I don't know. We got to learn Meruba. Okay. Yeah, but no, I definitely hear that. Okay, so that position of Rabbeinu Tam was one indication of the Mechayiv being the same. What indications do we have of the Mechayiv being different? So we quoted before. Oh, Micah, you see this? I forgot to do shift enter on this one. I don't know, on my page I have Bava Kama and Samech Hamad Aleph on two different lines.
Ours is good. It's good on the email.
Okay. Okay. So we mentioned the Gemara Bavakama Samachem and Aleph of Rav that Karen Kane Shoganav Kefal Dalav Vehe Kishas Hamad Bedin. What does it mean Kishas Hamad Bedin when we say with regard to Kefal and Dalav Vehe? And further, are Kefal and Dalav Vehe actually determined by the same moment in time or not? Or should we say, are they always determined by the same moment in time or not? So we find some interesting positions in the Rishonim. I'm just quoting some from the Masifta here because I didn't do this entire sugya, but. So the Shach in Choshem Mishpat Shindon Dalid, so he says that the Shas HaMad B'Din of Dalid Vehei is going to be the Shas HaGadus Yidus, the real Shas HaMad B'Din, when you come to Bezdin. That's what we would have all expected. That's Pashtos of the Gemara. And that's basically the same as other Knossos, right? Other Knossos also revolve around the process in Bezdin. So too, Dalid Vehei. So there's nothing Mechudosh about that position. But the Rosh, Bavakama Zayin Gimel, says that the value of the Dalid Vehei is going to be determined by the Shas Tevichol Mechiv, by the action of Tevicha Umechira. So that might suggest that the Tevicha Umechira itself is a different Mechayiv. That action adds, it doesn't continue the original Geneva, but it introduces a new dimension of Geneva to the picture. And that's why we would want to focus in on that trigger time for the value of the Dalav Vehei. And in addition, the Tosos Rin above a Kamas HaMachem and Aleph, the one that we've been quoting, so he says, he actually distinguishes between Kefel and Dalav Vehei. And he says that the Kefel is going to be determined by the Shas Geneva, whereas the Dalav Vehei is going to be determined by the Shas Tevicha Umechira. And if you say like that, then certainly what you're trying to say is that the Tvicho Mechira, the Dalav Vehei, is addressing an entirely novel dimension of Geneva, not just continuing a dimension that already existed at the Geneva with the Keva. Okay? And if so, and again, just to bring it full circle, if we reach the conclusion that Kefal and Dalav Vehei do have different mechayvim, so then we can maintain our position that the list of Rav Chiya is trying to include different paradigms of Nezek. What the Mechayiv of Tvicha Umechira would be, we didn't really flesh out in Shir. And if anyone's learning Meruba, I would love to hear. Okay, so that's Geneva Gezela and also Kefel and Dalav Vehei. Next, let's move on to Edim Zomerim. A lot of interesting stuff in Edim Zomerim. So first, let's begin with just a general question of the Mechayiv of Edim Zomerim. So we discussed this also in the context of Tosos Anchav Gimel Mibbez, Anchav Bez Mibbez, where Tosos was talking about Kimle Bidurabimine with regard to Edim Zomimin. So I think broadly speaking, we could pinpoint two avenues to look at Edim Zomimin. The first is to look at Edim Zomimin as a particular form of Edo Sheker. The Torah prohibits Edo Sheker, and then when you do Edo Sheker in this type of way, in the Hazama form, so then it has its own distinct punishment and its own distinct rules. But another way to look at Edim Zomimin is that this is actually a new category separate from Edo Sheker. And maybe what we're trying to say is that this is actually about the formal status of Eid Zomim. What Rebbe says is the shame Eid Zomim. And what that means is that when you do an act of Hazama is the wrong word, because Hazama is what the Mizimin do to the Zomimin. I don't know what the word for Zmama. Zmama, I think, would be the word. No? Any Diktok experts here? Huh? Zimun? Zmama, no? So when you do an act of Zmama, the Torah says that you now become, you now attain a certain status. And that status is Eid Zomim. It's a formal legal status. And corresponding to that status are many, many dinim. And what might motivate us to take that approach is weaknesses within the first approach. Are we really so sure that this was Eid Sheker? Maybe it's Treyu Trey. That's the visit that like we saw in Rava, right? Eid Zomim Chidushu. So maybe an echo of that would be to say that, yeah, you're right. We're not so sure that this is Eid Sheker. Elamai, the whole basis for this institution in Halacha is something different from Eid Sheker. It's a Chiddush HaTorah that when this event transpires, then the people involved in the event are labeled as certain perpetrators. And that's the Shem Eid Zomim approach. So some of the discussions that arise in the Gemara here, and Dalet Amud Beis and Hey Amud Aleph, might be related to that Mechayiv question. Yeah, Cass.
Yeah,
okay, so the Ramban and Yaramah, what we're trying to say is that the Ramban and Yaramah is Haratam as Hanefesh, Chilaltam as HaShavis. Why do we... What they're addressing is a different question, and we're relating it. Their question, I believe, is why do we believe the second set over the first set? Yeah? And then what they're saying is, what do you mean, why do we believe the second set over the first set? It's Haratam as Hanefesh, Chilaltam as HaShavis. The Torah tells you that... No, you can't lie under oath in this context, and this second set is testifying to the fact that the first set did that. So they did a ma'isavira. So of course we believe the second set. So that's like a logical way of viewing it. But then what we were saying in the Yad Ramah, and Rav Rosenzweig pointed out that this seems this way in the Ramban as well, because the Ramban acknowledges that there is a chiddush element to Edom Zomimin, that the chiddush of Edom Zomimin is to view the case that way, as Haratam as Hanefesh, Chilaltam as HaShabbos. Now, that addresses the question as to why you believe the second set over the first set. Whether it takes a stance on the Maisa Avera being the Edo Sheker, or on whether the Mechayiv of Kasher Zama being the Edo Sheker, or being the status of Edzomim, I'm not sure. You might be... What? I have to see it inside. I wonder if you can make the argument that we're not saying it's either sheker. We're saying that when Reuven and Shimon are made, in this context, we consider that a ma'isa avira. When Reuven and Shimon are made, and are later accused of being of imanu ha'yisem, so then their original edus is considered a ma'isa edus zimama, and that's a ma'isa avira. I don't know if you have to reach the conclusion that it's an Edo Sheker. Clear? Okay. So some of the discussions that we had in the Sugya of Rav Chiya, I think, may be related to this question of the Mechayiv of Edom Zomimin. Some of this is a little bit of my own Perush, trying to relate things one to another. So if you don't buy it, you don't buy it. But this is what I'm suggesting. So... The first discussion was the nature of the rule of kasher zamam la'asos la'achiv. The Torah says v'asisam lo kasher zamam la'asos la'achiv. The punishment for the edim zomimin is as they try to inflict upon the nidon. So what's the nature of that onesh of kasher zamam? Certainly a unique onesh, a mida keneged mida type of onesh. We don't often find that. Usually we have objective rules that dictate onshin. So one approach that we said is this is really just a shiur, meaning to say that the crime of Edos Zimama is so egregious and heinous that it deserves a punishment in accordance with the action that was trying to be executed. So if you say like that, then what you're saying is that this is a Maisa Avera, and it has an Onesh, and we're just making the shear of this Onesh one that corresponds to the Avera because of the egregiousness of the Avera. But the second approach is to look at it a little bit differently. The kasher zamam la'asos la'achiv is not just a shiur in the egregiousness of the ma'isa avira and therefore in the severity of the onesh, but rather kasher zamam la'asos la'achiv reflects the mechayiv of edus zimama, meaning the mechayiv of the onesh for edus zimama and the iser. What would that mechayiv be? So I think what we were trying to say is that what might be so wrong about an Eid Zomim is the Torah's establishment or view of this person as someone who used the system of Eidos, who exploited the system of Eidos in order to inflict damage. And you could really formulate Eidos Zimama in two different ways. You could say that it's Eidos Sheker that has a result of damage, right, or some negative, harmful result. Or you could also say that it is the usage, the utilization of the system of Eidus in order to inflict damage. I think those are two very different ways of viewing this Eidus Zimama. And the second one is what we're really opting for when we say Kasher Zamam La'asos La'achiv. You try to exploit the system in order to inflict this damage, meaning you try to be a damager via the means of Eidus, so then you're going to be damaged in the very same way. So I thought maybe, I don't know, I'm not sure if we were saying this in Shir, but I thought that that second approach is better within the shame Eid Zomim, because it takes the emphasis away from the Eidus Sheker, and it says more that the Torah is pinning you, it's viewing you as this type of person. It's giving you the status as an Eid Zomim, someone who tried to exploit the system. And then that's the Mechaiv of Kasher Zamam La'asos La'achiv. You try to exploit the system, it's going to boomerang right back at you. So what nafkamina could we have between these two different approaches as to the nature of Kasher Zamam? So this was a machlukas between Rashi and the Riva as to whether Eidim Zomimin always pay Meitav. Rashi thinks that Eidim Zomimin always pay Meitav, even if they were trying to damage Ziburis, whereas the Riva says, no, they're always going to pay whatever they try to damage. What's the Nekudas HaMachlokas between Rashi and the Riva? So we suggested that these are reflective of these two different views of Kasher Zamam La'asos La'achiv. Rashi saying that Kasher Zamam is really a shiur in the Onesh. So the Edom tried to inflict damage on this on Shimon Ziburis. Their Maisa Avera was egregious. Therefore, they have to pay of their own land in return. But it's an Onesh, and therefore it's like other Nizkei Mamon, and they have to pay Meitav. That's Rashi's approach. But what the Riva is saying is that no, every element of the Onesh has to match what the Edom Zomimin tried to do. Why? Because the whole Mechaiv of this Isser and the Onesh is that boomerang, that Mida Kenegan Mida. The fact that you try to exploit the system in this way, and it's going to fire right back at you. And therefore, you would pay Ziburis, not Meitav. That's point number one. Point number two, which I think was a much clearer nafkamina, was Hoda Biknas. So Rabbi Akiva, the Gemara quotes the position of Rabbi Akiva that the Onesh of Edim Zomimin is a Knas. Rabbi Akiva says, Ein Meshalmin Al Pi Atzman, if you're Moda Biknas, if the Edim Zomimin are Moda Biknas, then they're Potter. What's the case of Hoda Biknas? So this is a machlokas between Rashi and the Tosos Rib. Rashi thinks that it's a case where Reuven and Shimon were declared Edim Zomimin in Bezdin X, then they went to Bezdin Y, and they were Moda and Bezdin Y before they were established as Edom Zomimin in Bezdin Y. Tosfos Rit says, no, it's much simpler. You know what happened? It was all in Bezdin X. The Edom Zomimin, so the Edom testified, and then they said, you know what? Actually, we weren't there. We weren't there B'Shas Maisa. So they declared themselves Edom Zomimin. That's the case of Hodah B'Knas, and says the Tosfos Rit that even if Edom are going to come after that Hodah, the Hodah will be Poter, because that's Moda B'Knas Poter. So Rashi's position is Mechudash here, and the Tosfos Rid has many attacks on Rashi. And basically, it concerns the question as to why, according to Rabbi Akiva, within Rashi, the Hodah would have to take place in a different Bezdin. Is it so clear that the Hodah has to take place in a different Bezdin? So the Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz says, no, Rashi's incorrect. The Hodah B'Vezdin can take place in the same Bezdin, as long as there wasn't a Gemar Din. This is the Chiddush of Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz. He says, even if other Edim came and were mazin Reuven and Shimon as Edim Zomimin, as long as there wasn't a Gemar Din, if the Edim Zomimin, if Reuven and Shimon are Moda B'Knas, they're Potter. That's a Chiddush, because usually we say Moda B'Knas La'achar Shabau Edim is Chayv. Right? So that's a Chiddush of Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz, but he says, no, who cares whether it's in this Bezdin, that Bezdin, as long as the Oda B'Knas happened before the Gemar Din, then they're going to be Potter. But what's mashma from Rashi is that we need a separate Bezdin for this Hodah to be Chal. Not only that, but it seems like from Rashi, if we're really Medaik, that it might even, in order to be Mechayiv the Edom Zomimin, it might even require a separate Tviya on the part of the Nidon. What kind of business is that? Who needs a separate Tviya? Why can't the Bezdin just say they're Chayiv and they have to pay? So, Tulsus Rabbeinu Peretz explains why, according to Rashi, do you need a separate Bezdin? Because a Hodah is only good if there's also a possibility of Kvira. This is a Yesod in Hodah. So if you couldn't have denied, then the fact that you admitted is not so substantive, right? Not so significant. It's the fact that you could have denied that when you admit, then you're doing something that's praiseworthy. So Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz says he couldn't have denied in the original Beis Din because the Beis Din already knew that they were Edom Zomim. Therefore, they have to go to a new Beis Din that doesn't know that they're Edom Zomim and be moded there. And then they'll be potter. But Rav Rosenzweig explains a different fundamental explanation within the world of Hazama in order to explain this position in Rashi. It's a beautiful chiddush. Says Rav Rosenzweig that what Rashi is trying to say here is that we need a separate din. We need a new din in order to address the Edom Zomim. And in order to reflect, or maybe even more, in order to define this as a new din, it has to be in a new Beis Din. And maybe even it needs a new Tviyah. Why do you need a separate din? So this reverts back to our general discussion about the Mechayev of Edom Zomim. If we think that it's all about the Edo Sheker, so it's not a new din. Everything happened at T0 when the Edom were Meid Sheker, and everything that happens afterwards is about that moment in time. But if we think that the Mechayev of Edom Zomim is about the Shein Eid Zomim, this formal status that the Torah pins on the Edom Zomim, so then that's a new stage, it's a new file in the case of Edom Zomim. First, Reuven and Shimon lied. That was kind of the Maisa that happened, that then caused the whole new din to take place, where the second set of Edom are Mezim the first, and the din is on the Shem Eid Zomim. It's no longer on the Eid Sheker. It's no longer the din between the Edom Zomimim and the Nidon. It's the din between the Mezimim and the Zomimim. And in order to reflect or cause that this is a new din, it has to be brought to a new Beis Din and it needs a new Tviyah. That is the position of Rashi within, according to Rav Rosenzweig. Beautiful. Next. So, more at home. Why does Edom Zomimim make the list? How is Edom Zomimim really considered a case of Nezek if, after all, we know of the famous principle of Kasher Zomam velo Kasher Asa? So there are two formulations of that question. I'm not sure if we actually pin down these two different formulations, but it's good to know regardless. Tosfos HaRash and most of the other Rishonim and Achronim think that that question posed by Tosfos originally is trying to say that if we hold of Kasher Zomim velo Kasher Asa, then the Chiyuv Tashlumin of Edom Zomimim is going to apply only when the Edom Zomimim were not successful. Only when there was no Hafsin Mamon that actually took place. If there was a Hafsin Mamon, then there's no Chiyuv Tashlumin on the part of Edom Zomimim to talk about. So how could you tell me that this is an Av Nezek when the only case of Tashlumin is going to be when there's no Hafsin Mamon? That's Tosfos HaRash. The Rashash says it a little bit differently, that if Kasher Zomim velo Kasher Asa is true, then the Chiyuv of Tashlumin of the Edom Zomimim must be defined as a Knas, and if it's a Knas, then it's not a case of Av Nezek. It's not a case of Chiyuv Tashlumin Nezek. So what are the different approaches that we have to this question, and how do these approaches connect back to our original question as to the nature of the list of Rav Chiya? So the Ri in Tosfos says that Kasher Zomim velo Kasher Asa doesn't apply to Mominus because we say Onshin Min Adin. So therefore, we get out of the entire question to begin with because it's not true that the only Chiyuv of Tashlumin for Edom Zomimin is when there was no Hafsin Mamon. There's also a Chiyuv Tashlumin when there is a Hafsin Mamon. The Riva says it differently. He thinks that Kasher Zomim velo Kasher Asa doesn't apply to Mominus because Mominus is revocable. So you could see that in two different ways. You could either say that that means that Mamonos is mufka from Kasher Zomim below Kasher Asa, or you could say that because Mamon is revocable, therefore you never have Kasher Asa. Meaning Kasher Zomim below Kasher Asa does apply to Mamonos, it just won't ever really exist because Mamon is always revocable, and therefore you don't have Kasher Asa. So the question on both of these approaches that we dealt with is when Reb Chiya says that Edom Zomim is on the list, is he saying that only in cases of quote-unquote kasher asa? Meaning to say he's saying that Edom Zomimim makes the list only when there actually was a hafsin mamon? Or is the fact that there's a possibility of hafsin mamon, is the fact that there's a theoretical case of hafsin mamon sufficient to have Edom Zomimim on the list even when there's no hafsin mamon in the particular case before us? So, it seems like from the Rashash, and also from the Netziv in Merome Sadeh, that the first approach is true. The Rashash wonders what Tosfos will do about cases of Mamon that are irrevocable. So, the premise of that question, or that issue, is assuming that this whole Yesod, that Kasher Zomim velo Kasher Asa, is not a problem by Mamonos because Mamonos is revocable, is predicated on the assumption that in Metzius, the Mamon is revocable. We could have made the... And therefore, I think what emerges from the Rashash is that, according to Tosos, Rav Chiya is only going to include cases where you would actually have the possibility of Kasher Asa. But when you don't have the possibility of Kasher Asa, when there's no possibility that the Edim Zomimin will be Chayav and there will be a Hefsin Mamon of that combination, then that doesn't make the list. But Rav Rosenzweig responded that no. Maybe we could say that, according to Tosos, as long as we have some avenue of Hefsin Mamon, together with the Chiyuv of Edim Zomimin, the Chiyuv Tashlumin, so that's sufficient to say that all cases of Edim Zomimin will make the list. Because, and this really hit home with the next opinion, and how would we explain that? Because what we're trying to say is that this is not just a case of Tashlumin that's on the list of Rav Chiya. If it were just a case of Tashlumin, then there would need to be Tashlumin. You can't have a case without Tashlumin that makes a list of cases of Tashlumin. That's contradictory. Elamai, no. What we're saying is that the list of Rav Chiya is trying to pinpoint different paradigms, and Tosos is saying that in order to be a paradigm of Nezek, there just has to be some expression of a Hefsin Mamon. As long as there's some expression of a Hefsin Mamon within this category, then the entire category will register, even the cases of that category that lack a Hefsin Mamon. Okay, I'll get to you in 1 second. I just want to go through the Rambam. The most extreme opinion on this matter is the Rambam and the Rimi L'Oniel, the Rambam according to Reb Chaim and the Rimi L'Oniel, that Kasher Zoma V'lo Kasher Asa does apply to Mamonos. It does apply. Just blanketly. No excuses. It applies to Mamonos. How could you say that Kasher Zoma V'lo... So then, Hadru Kosher L'Duchta, Tosos' question, what are we going to do with Tosos' question? How can Edim Zomimin apply to a list of Nizkei Mamon when we say Kasher Zoma V'lo Kasher Asa? So you'll never have the combination, you'll never have the confluence of Hefsin Mamon on the one hand and a Chiyuv Tashlumin on the other. So no. So that's again the exact Yisod we're trying to say. That Edim Zomimin is a paradigm of Nezek. It's a Maisa Nezek or a Chefza Shal Nezek. It's a paradigm of Nezek. It's someone who tries to exploit a system in order to inflict damage, even if there's no Hefsin Mamon to be talked about. Because this list is not about Hefsin Mamon. It's not about cases in which parties lose out and therefore other people have to pay. The list is about different paradigms of Nezek that we have in Halacha and Edim Zomimin, because maybe as the Rashba says, that they're conspiring, they're trying to be Mazik, their exploitation itself is a form of Nezek. Whatever you say, the paradigm of Edim Zomimin will remain a paradigm of Nezek, even if there is no case of Hefsin Mamon. Cass.
Yeah, even in the Tosos, like, even if we're just trying to find one case, like not like Rosh Hashanah, like one case of Hefsin Mamon.
Yeah.
So, like, Rebbe seemed to have, like, a couple different ways of reading the line of Tosos, where he says that Mamon is reversible. Like, Pashup Shad is that...
That's what I was saying before. That the Efshir Bechazara, you could say one of two things. You could say that it means that Kasher Zom V'lo Kasher Asa never applies to Mamonos. It doesn't apply to Mamonos because Mamonos is the type of din that's revocable. Meaning, so the principle just was never stated with regard to Mamonos. Or that no.
Why would it not apply?
What?
Why would it not apply to
Jerusalem just because
it's not called
Asa? Because probably the principle is based on, or it's limited to cases where you have very definitive results. That's one way of formulating it. Another way of saying it is that no, in fundamentally, essentially, it applies, but you'll just never be able to, you'll never have a practical application of it, because every case of Mamon, almost every case, is Efshar Bechazara, and if something is Efshar Bechazara, then it's not Mugdar as Kasher Asa. Right. When Bezdin's Motzi Mamon, that's Asa. But since it's the revocable type of Asa, it doesn't make the list of Kasher Zama below Kasher Asa. Because that list is limited to very definitive Asas. Okay? Good. Let's finish up. So we have Hezek Sheinu Nikar, I said Isaac Bezer Hashem is going to do next week. Let's do Menasich. So Rashi has a chiddush on Menasich. Reb Chiya says that Menasich is one of the Avos Nezikin. What's the case of Menasich? So Rashi and Dalet and Beis, also Hamad Aleph, says that it's not a case where you mix Yayin Nesach together with other Yayin, but rather it's a case where you actually take Yayin and you're Menasich it le'avodah zarah. So why was Rashi motivated to say the latter and not the former? Especially since, as the Tosos Reid points out, Iruv Yayin Nesach also causes a Hefsin Mum. Rashi says that the reason why Iruv is not doesn't make the list of Nizkei Mamun is because you can sell the wine. Chutz midmei yayin esach shaba. Says the Tosfos Reid, you're still going to have a loss. No one's going to buy yayin that has yayin esach in it for the same price that that they'll buy a stam barrel of wine for. And even if you're talking amongst the goyim, so the goyim will know, it's supply and demand. The goyim will know that no one else is going to buy this, so it's going to go for much cheaper. So it's still going to be a hefsin mamun. So the Maharsha says that the reason why Rashi opts for this explanation of actual Nisuch Yayin Avodah Zarah is because he's trying to individuate Menasech from Midameya. Because if it's Iruv Yayin Nesech with Stam Yayin, so then that would just be like a case of Midameya. And Rashi, and then the Klal Masayim Mana, you don't need to count both. Because then the case of Menasech would really just be Midameya, would reduce to Midameya. So therefore, Rashi says Menasech must really mean something else in order for it to register as a separate category. But once we say that, do we mean that what Rashi is trying to do is just trying to find the difference between the cases? Or do we mean that he's trying to find different paradigms? So from the Pnei Yoshua, it seems like, and you could tell me when you see the Pnei Yoshua, but it seems like the Pnei Yoshua is taking the former. He's saying that Rashi's just saying that you're not going to count two different cases that are the same case of Nezek. So therefore, I have to come up with some difference between the cases, Tarte Lamali, and therefore I'll say that Menasech is really Nisuch Yayin Avodah Zarah and not Iruv. Because if it were Iruv, then it would really just be an example of Midameya. But Rav Rosenzweig suggested that maybe you could say more. You could say that this works even better if what Rashi is searching for is a different paradigm of Nezek. And lo harei menasech, the action of giving something to Avodah Zarah and thereby prohibiting it behano, to midameah, where you're basically creating a taruves that's going to have a mimela iser. Lastly, we discussed Mefagel. The Gemara says the Mefagel doesn't meet the list. So this discussion of Mefagel is not really going to be so relevant for the first question about the nature of the list, because it doesn't meet the list. Right? Although you could make the argument that the Gemara's exclusion of Bishlam on Mefagel B'Kodshim Lo Kamayri is really kind of like a technical exclusion, and fundamentally Mefagel could have made the list. So if you make the argument that Mefagel could have made the list in theory, it doesn't make the list because of this technical exclusion of Kodshim. But if it could have made the list, then what would be the argument to say that Mefagel would be like a type of Nezek? So in order to explain that, we first have to see what Mefagel refers to. What is Mefagel? So we would have said that Mefagel is Machshev Eschutz Lizmano. That's the classic case of Pegel. And that's what the Tosus HaRash thinks is really the case. Or at least he says that should be the case. But Rashi has a Chiddush, and he says the Mefagel doesn't refer to Machshev Eschutz Lizmano, but rather Machshev Eshalo Lishma. And he gives a very specific case of Machshev Eshalo Lishma. Shchitas Chatos L'shem Shlom. Which the Mishnah in Zvachim, the Beis Amid Aleph says, is posel the korban. When you have a chatas and you do it shalol l'shma, that's posel the korban. So that actually makes another comment in Rashi even more startling, namely the fact that Rashi says that the reason why this is a nezek is because the bialim need another korban. They need to bring another korban. Lo alu l'bialim l'shem chova. But as Rav Rosenzweig pointed out, that's very strange, because that's true with regard to all korbanos. That's not limited to chatas and pesach, which are actually pasul if they're shalol lishma. All korbanos, even shlamim shalol lishma, is lo alu l'bayil l'mashim chova. So why would Rashi take the consequence of the other korbanos and apply it here, where he's talking about the case of chatas, which has a more inherent psul? So the Pnei Yoshua distinct, and furthermore, the more basic question, which the Rishonim ask, why does Rashi deviate from the normal explanation of Pegel? Why does he say Machsheves Shelo Lishma instead of Machsheves Chutz Lizman? So the Pnei Yoshua distinguishes between these two poslim, the classical Pegel and Shelo Lishma, and he says that the classical Pegel constitutes the classical Pegel is really only a mazik once the entire process of the korban takes place, once the zrika is done. Whereas machsheva shelo lishma is posel even from the moment of shechita. And Rav Rosenzweig, based on that, this is not exactly what the Pnei Yoshua says, but Rav Rosenzweig took from that Rashi could be saying that machsheva shelo lishma might constitute more of a posel than machsheva chutz lizmano. Machsheves chutz lizmano is a machshava that sets the stage for a psul, but the psul happens mimela once the korban is completed. Whereas machsheves shelo lishma is it's more of a posel. What do we mean by more of a posel? It's an immediate posel. It has an immediate effect, and that might be reflective that this is a more inherent psul. And what Rashi's searching for here, therefore, on the list of Rav Chiya, when we're considering the potential of Mefagel being an Av Nezek, so we're looking for something that is really a bona fide Mazik. It's not just something that takes place in the world of Kachim that eventually reaches a Nezek result. We're looking for something that's actually a Mazik in and of itself. And for that, we need Machsheves Shelo Lishma. So perhaps that's why Rashi opts to give Machsheves Shelo Lishma instead of Machsheves Chutz Lizmano. And if you'd like to know about the answer to the other question about why Rashi mentions the consequence of Lo Alu L'Bailan L'Shem Chova, even though he's talking about Chatas, so come to me afterwards. I would love to discuss that. Shkoach to everybody. Isaac will be continuing with Hezek Sheino Nikar. And Bli Neder, hopefully either Isaac or I will give Mitav/Mazik Kochi. Bye.